Good evening. It's good to be here again this evening with you. I hope you had a good day today. It was a beautiful day, and I certainly enjoyed the beautiful weather you have here. Tonight, I would like to think about God's special message to man, and that's astronomy. I'm going to take a little trip to outer space tonight. I'm probably not going to get very far out there. But I'd like to look at a few verses first. Maybe start with Psalm 19. It says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard." And we keep reading there, but for sake of time, we'll have to stop. Another psalm, Psalm 8. It's a beautiful psalm. Psalm 8, verse 1, "O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set thy glory above the heavens." Verse 3, "When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon, the stars, which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him?" And then another verse in Nehemiah chapter 9. Two verses there, actually. Nehemiah 9:5. This is talking about the Levites. They were standing there, and along with some other people, they said, "Stand up and bless the Lord your God forever and ever, and blessed be thy glorious name, which is exalted above all blessing and praise. Thou, even our God, art Lord alone. Thou hast made the heaven of the heavens, with all their host, and the earth, and all things that are therein, the seas and all that is therein. And thou preservest them all, and the host of heaven worshipeth thee." Think about that, the starry host just worshiping God. Got a few quotes here. "Whoever it was who searched the heavens with a telescope and found no God would not have found the human mind if he had searched the brain with a microscope." And also another quote. "Some label it the universe, others name it cosmos. Some entitle it the heavens, others simply call it space. The term that fits best is the glory of God." And then one more. "Because God is strong, his creation shows power. Because God is great, his creation is vast. Because God is beautiful, his creation reflects glory. And because God is love, his creation includes you." And that's pretty incredible, isn't it? Think of all the vastness of space, but he thinks about you and I. Okay, I'd like to look, first of all, at the creation of the heavens. If you want to turn to Genesis chapter 1, we'll read a few verses there. Genesis 1:14, "God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the night, day from the night. Let them be for signs, for seasons, for days and years. Let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, the lesser light to rule the night." And that seems like an afterthought almost. "He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light upon the earth and to rule over the day and over the night, to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And another verse yet in Jeremiah 32:17. It's a beautiful verse. I think we need to latch hold on this sometimes. Jeremiah 32:17. It says, "Ah, Lord God, behold, thou hast made the heaven and the earth by thy great power and stretched out arm. There's nothing too hard for thee." Nothing. You know, we get kind of bogged down sometimes and not sure where to turn. Nothing is too hard for God. I'd like to think just a little bit about the vastness of the universe. Our universe is incomprehensibly vast. Another little quote here, and I really like this one. "The larger the sea of knowledge," so the more we think we know, "the greater the boundaries of the unknown." So, you know, as we look in the stars, you know, where's the boundary? You know, man can see this far with his powerful telescopes, but what's beyond? Job 22:26-7. "He stretcheth out the north over the empty place and hangeth the earth." What does he hang upon? Nothing. Now, if you or I would hang something on nothing, will it fall? God holds it in place. "And he stretcheth out the north." I'm not sure what all that means. Another verse in, we can just turn to Isaiah. There's a number of verses there. Isaiah 40, "It is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretcheth out the heaven as a curtain." Just open it, stretches it, "and spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in." Isaiah 42, verse 5. "Thus saith the Lord, he that created the heavens and stretched them out, he that spread forth the earth and that which cometh out of it." I'll just stop there. Isaiah 44, verse 24. "Thus saith the Lord, thy Redeemer, he that formed thee from the womb, I am the Lord, that maketh all things, that stretcheth forth the heavens alone." He did it all by himself. Didn't have to ask anybody how to do this. "That spreadeth abroad the earth by myself." So again, God, nothing is too hard for God. Isaiah 45, verse 12. "I have made the earth and created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out the heavens and all their hosts have I commanded. Well, that's maybe enough on that one. Stretching it out of the universe. If this stretching out is still going on, what rate is it? Is that rate constant? Has it ever changed from the beginning? Well, we don't know. Okay, the universe confirms the first law of science. Remember that the creation was finished. Genesis 2:1, God said, I'm done. Creation's done. And it also testifies to the second law. And that second law of thermodynamics is that it's a law of entropy, which means everything is going downhill. Okay, let's talk about the sun just a little bit. How many of you know how many miles the sun is from the earth?
93 million?
That's right. Somewhere there, around 93 million miles away. Now, if you think about the sun, I'll just put it on the board. We'll call that the sun. How many Earths do you think could fit in there? One million 300,000 Earths. That's right. Yep. So it's a pretty big place. But as we continue on, the sun gets smaller and smaller. The sun produces what?
Heat
and
energy,
light. How long does it take for the light from the sun to get to the earth?
8 minutes.
Okay, good. 8 minutes. If we turn off the sun, we wouldn't know it for about 8 minutes. And if the sun and the moon would exchange places, the moon would look kind of like a dim star out there. But the sun would completely engulf the earth. So it'd probably be this little tiny dot. And it would extend about 190,000 miles beyond. So it'd be just a little dot in here. And go another 190,000 miles. That's how small we are. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about sunspots, solar flares, and solar storms. The sun has magnetic fields, kind of like the earth does. But because these lines are rotating at different rates, they get tangled up with each other. And so we have these huge clouds of relatively cool, dense plasma that escaped the sun's atmosphere. I have some pictures of that, but just every now and then something escapes, and so we have these sunspots or solar flares. And what does that create? Something you've probably seen here, I would think.
Northern lights.
And we saw them down even in Oregon. Some people saw them more than once, but it's a beautiful sight. It also can cause a solar storm, and that I'm not sure which. This is a while back I studied this, so they had the most recent one then was a couple years ago, was in 2011. October. This traveled at 2 million miles per hour, reached the Earth 41 hours later. But the Earth's magnetic field got in the way and shielded us from most of it, of the harmful particles. But it didn't mess up the Earth's north-pointing magnetic field and sent off a blaze of northern lights as far south as, well, the southern USA. And the most severe solar storm on record was in 1859. And I think you can read this in Morse Yoder's book, The Celestial Message. And of course, that was back in 1859. Their means of communication was a telegraph machine. And people were getting electric shocks from it, set their papers on fire. But if that would happen today, it would be an internet apocalypse. It would result in maybe $1 to $2 trillion damage just in the U.S. alone. Fortunately, it only happens about every 500 years, so hopefully it won't happen anytime soon. But it does every, about half that size happens about every 50 years, so be prepared. Okay, the sun and the stars. The sun, of course, is the closest star. At least that's what they tell us. It is mostly composed of hydrogen and helium. And most astronomers believe that it produces energy by nuclear fusion. The sun produces enough energy. I'm going to tell you some numbers here that'll probably go, at least it goes over the top of my head. The sun produces enough energy in 1 second as 20 billion hydrogen bombs. Now, a hydrogen bomb is 1,000 times more powerful than the A-bomb that was used on Japan. 1,000 times more powerful. But the sun produces in 1 second 20 billion of those hydrogen bombs. The amount of energy released by the sun in 1 second is equal to the amount of 2.5 billion of the Earth's largest power plants that could produce in an entire year. Or, if you can figure that out, 380 septillion watts, whatever that is. Or converting that to horsepower would equal 500 billion trillion. But that's not all. The pistol star in the Milky Way, it produces 10 million times more energy in 6 seconds than the sun does in an entire year. But that's, there's still more. Astronomers tell us that quasars, or I'm not sure how you say that, quasars, are so powerful that just one could outshine our entire galaxy, including the pistol star, 100 times over. So quasar is a region in the center of a galaxy that produces enormous energy and radiation. Okay, think about how big the sun is. I mean, there's things a lot bigger than this. But if you think about how big the sun is, if you would fly a jet 650 miles an hour from one end through the diameter, it would take 2 months of nonstop travel of 864,000 miles. One end to the other. 2 months travel, nonstop. You would probably melt before you'd ever enter. Okay, then the closest star beyond the sun is, does anyone want to guess how many miles that is? The closest star outside of the sun. It's only about 25 trillion miles, or 4 light years. take 4 light years to reach the earth. The Milky Way, that's within our solar system. And on a dark night, you can see the Milky Way, kind of a foggy mass of stars out there. It's 15,000 times farther away than the nearest star. So we got Proxima Centauri, which is the nearest star, 15,000 times further out. It's the nearest star, or the nearest star beyond the sun. And they said it could have 250 billion stars. I'm not sure how they begin to count. And that Milky Way is about 100,000 light years from one end to the other. If you go straight through it, it's about 10,000 light years deep. So it's just a speck of dust in a countless sea of galaxies across the universe. Heading out another 500,000 times is from the nearest star is Andromeda Galaxy. It's the furthest galaxy that you can see with the naked eye. That's about 2.4 million light years away. It's about the same diameter as the Milky Way, 100,000 light years. You know, that's really only a start. Tell us that there are billions of light years out, galaxies out there with trillions and trillions of stars. Sorry, Laban, we might go till 9 o'clock. No. A few verses, maybe I have that written down here. Psalm 147, 4 and 5. He telleth the number of the stars, he calleth them all by their names. Great is the Lord, his understanding is infinite. Yeah, it's so far beyond us. You know, if God knows the name of trillions and trillions of stars, you know, just one person in 8 billion, that would be a pretty simple matter, wouldn't it? And I believe God knows the name of each one of you here this evening. Quote here from Bill Nye, the science guy, ardent evolutionist. He said, "I am a speck on a speck, orbiting a speck among other specks, still among still other specks in the middle of specklessness." And he said some kind of slang that it's just, I am nothing. So material scientists cannot find God in space, matter, or time. And I believe neither do they want to. They prefer to be willingly ignorant. I'd like to talk about the planets just a little bit. Closest planet is Mercury, right? It's closest to the sun. And the sun would appear 3 times larger than it does to us if you were on the planet of Mercury. It's also the fastest planet. It's 112,000 miles per hour. And again, I don't understand all that. It's the smallest planet with the least amount of gravity. So a 150-pound man would weigh about 57 pounds. It's a good place to lose weight. But it has the greatest temperature swings, 280 degrees below zero at night and 800 degrees at sunrise. I bet. It's not a good place to live. And it's constantly bombarded with rocks, boulders, asteroids. It's just not a good place to live. Okay, Venus is the next planet. It's called the morning and the evening star. It's probably one of the first planets you can see when the sun goes down. And it's right there. It's about the same size as the Earth. It's called its twin sister. But it's also the hottest of all planets. It's hot enough to melt lead and with clouds filled with sulfuric acid. Even though it's 31 million miles further from the sun than Mercury, its atmosphere traps the heat with an average of 870 degrees. It has enormous mountains on it, 7 miles high, and has no water. Tremendous gravity pressure of 1,300 pounds per square inch, which would be about the same pressure we would feel at 3,000 feet below, under the water. Well, the Earth is the third planet, it's the next one in line. It's so precisely placed from the sun, it's the only planet with life. 1% closer, it would make life impossible. And 1% further away, it'd be too cold. Ozone filters out much of the sun's ultraviolet radiation. Just the right amounts of carbon dioxide, nitrogen, and oxygen for life. Isaiah 45, verse 18, it says, "The earth was formed to be inhabited." Although our world is fairly small, it's sustainable, we can inhabit it. And the earth alone is packed with vibrant life almost in every space. The next one is Mars. It's called the rusty planet. It has iron oxide in it. It's a place of gigantic dormant volcanoes and canyons that cut 5 times deeper than the Grand Canyon. Temperature drops so low that it literally freezes the air and has polar ice caps, kind of like the Earth does. But I don't know about the water. There's not much water, if any water. Temperature drops so low it literally freezes. Yeah, I just said that. Mars is shrouded in mystery, myth, and folklore, and scientists have searched and hoped to see life. There's no little green men have ever been found, or water, or bacteria, or simple life. It's just devoid of life. Jupiter is the next one. It's called the King of Planets. It's 11 times the diameter of the Earth, and it's bigger and heavier than all the other planets combined. Jupiter's size produces enormous gravitational attraction. So a 100-pound person there would weigh 253 pounds, so it's not a good place to lose weight. Jupiter protects the Earth by swallowing up asteroids and comets that would be potentially devastating. So just the gravitational pull pulls them away from the Earth, protects the Earth. And that was observed in 1992-94 as comet fragments as large as 2.5 miles in diameter were just sucked by its gravitational forces. Think about a 2.5 mile diameter, what that would land in your vicinity or anywhere in the Earth. It'd be devastating. Jupiter has at least 63 moons, and 4 of which can be seen with a small telescope or binoculars. I'm not sure if I've ever looked that hard. Saturn, it's the planet with rings. It's made up of shimmering ice particles, some as small as a grain of salt and others as large as a house. And these rings are very detailed in structure. Saturn's a very large planet as well. It could swallow up 700 Earths. It's the farthest planet out that can be seen with the naked eye. And that planet has 62 moons circling it. Okay, Uranus and Neptune, they're called the gas giant twins. Uranus is the coldest planet in the solar system with a temperature of 357 degrees below zero. Blue-green color is the result of methane gas in the atmosphere, which sends off an odor of rotting animals. And I'm not sure how they know that, but 27 moons, 9 rings stretching across its sky. But what really throws you for a loop is Uranus is, its axis is almost horizontal. You know, the Earth's axis is probably about 23 degrees. A lot of the other planets are anywhere from 25. I think there's maybe 140. Some don't have that with me here. This one is almost horizontal. And I think there's another planet. Most planets spin. Let's see, I think I wrote that down somewhere. I don't see it here, but I think most planets spin counterclockwise. There's one or so that spin the other way. And so, according to evolution, all the planets should have been kind of spun outward like a gyroscope. Should just all be spinning a certain way. Well, this Uranus really messed up their theory. Yeah, I think Venus is the other one that spins the wrong way. Okay, Neptune is the windiest planet. You know, we think if we have a 100-mile-an-hour wind, that's pretty bad. This one, the winds can get up to 1,500 miles per hour. It has a large moon named Triton, which is a cold spot of the solar system at 391 degrees below zero. And probably when some of you older ones went to school, we talked about Pluto as being a planet, but they don't call that a planet anymore. It's just a large asteroid. One more thing about Uranus. Evolutionary astronomers believe an object twice the size of the Earth collided with Uranus roughly 4 billion years ago, causing that tilt that is so different from the other. So 4 billion years ago, it got messed up, according to them. And this tilt causes extreme seasons that last 20-plus years. The sun beats down on one pole or the other for 84 years at a time. Okay, let's think a little bit about the stars. We're not getting very far yet. But the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 15:41 says that there's no two stars alike, putting it in my own words. And for many years it was assumed that all the stars were just alike. But scientists now tell us that there's no two stars alike. Should have read their Bibles. Now, a casual glance at the stars, and they look so peaceful and tranquil. But there's tremendous amounts of energy are powering these stars, these heavens. Hebrews 1:3 says, God upholds all things by the word of his power. Okay. I'd like to look a little bit at the stars. I'm not going to take much time here, but the supergiants. So let's shrink our Earth down to about the size of a quarter, about that size. Uranus would be about 4 inches tall, so it'd be about up to there, something like that. Jupiter, about the size of a basketball compared to the Earth, would be about the basketball size, somewhere down here. Sirius would be about 16 feet tall, or probably at least as high as the ceiling, or probably higher, compared with this quarter of Earth. Arcturus would be 234 feet tall, and Regal would be about 700 feet tall, or twice as high as the Statue of Liberty. Betelgeuse would be about 10,000 feet tall, or seven twin towers on top of the other. But Canis Majoris, you know, stretches our mind. So the Earth would be as a size of a quarter. It would be about 3 miles tall. So that's a ways up there. It would be 500,000 times brighter than the sun, I think. It's about, that star is about 5,000 light years away, and 500,000 times brighter, or 30 to 40 times more massive than the sun. So it'd be 30 to 40 times larger than the sun. The sun were replaced by this star, its orbit would extend to the orbit of Saturn, the farthest planet you can see with the naked eye, if the sun were replaced by that star. That's huge. Okay, maybe enough on that. Might go over a few minutes if it's okay. Let's think about our eyes a little bit. It takes about 30 minutes for our eyes to adjust to darkness. After our eyes adapt, they are 10,000 times more sensitive than they are in full daylight. Many constellations can be seen without the use of optics, and we have some mentioned in Job. Meteor showers are best viewed with the naked eye. They appear suddenly at any point and last for a second or two. The rays from starlight can travel for hundreds or thousands of years in pristine condition, but appear to twinkle. If you look up the stars, they have a kind of twinkling. Why is that? If you get out further in space, they don't twinkle. Well, it's that haze of our atmosphere that makes them appear to twinkle. They're really distorted, or so to avoid that problem, astronomers had the largest space-based telescope ever built. And that was the Hubble. I think that was back in the 1990. It orbits 350 miles above the Earth, and that's above the distortion of our atmosphere. But when they first set it up, the images coming back were not at all what they hoped for. It was, in fact, a complete failure. So after they tested, it was discovered that this 94-inch mirror was ground too flat by a mere 1/50th of a human hair. So they designed, they installed corrective optics on their first servicing mission. So they sent up a new pair of glasses up there. And the results were very phenomenal. According to NASA, its vision is so keen that standing at the U.S. Capitol, you can see the date on a quarter at the Washington Monument, about a mile away. This telescope was kind of the gateway to the stars. It sent back thousands of very spectacular images. Then in December 2021, they sent up the James Webb telescope. And that has enough fuel for about 10 years, and it costs about $10 billion. It has many systems on it. They're hoping it lasts 5 to 10 years. Its orbit is beyond the moon instead of just 350 miles out in space. And it uses infrared cameras, captures invisible light, much sharper than the Hubble ever did. It's designed to observe light from the oldest galaxies, according to evolution, the oldest ones. We find out how the earliest stars and how they were formed. So again, they start out with this worldview that evolution is true. And it's got to be the oldest ones or the furthest out. Well, there's so much more to you could talk about nebulas, supernovas. But if you have Morris Schroeder's book, you can take a look at that. It's some remarkable things in there. Well, one thing we didn't talk about is starlight. You know, if we're talking about millions of light years away, how did that light get to Earth? Well, like that verse I read, there's nothing too hard for God, I think. For one thing, with the universe, it could have been much closer at one time, especially at creation. And as stars expanded, that wasn't a problem to get light to the Earth. But even if it was out there millions of miles away, I believe God could have sent that light immediately. I don't think it would have been a problem. Well, I think we're going to quit with that. Another quote yet. All nature is wooing us to himself. Is God wooing us to himself? Another one. When life is overwhelming, I step outside and lift my gaze to the heavens, for I am convinced that the God who holds the stars in place will hold us through the night. Now, if God knows the number of stars, trillions and trillions, he knows your name too, quite easily. He probably knows you just as good as any star out there. I think that's all I have for tonight. Thank you for your